Welcome to the East County Magazine Live Radio Show, the voice of East County, bringing you the hottest news and coolest events from the communities of San Diego's East County. We're your community radio, representing the public interest, not special interests. Broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso with your host, Miriam Raftery.
This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, recording at our studio here in East County. Today we open with a look ahead at the week's weather forecast, which includes thunderstorms and possible flash flooding. Next, we'll have some top national news headlines from Public News Service, including a heat wave that has much of the nation sweltering, a growing impeachment effort in Congress, and a bill to protect wildlife. On Green Scene, hear about some public forums coming up where you can make your voice heard as the county considers a community choice option that would let the county produce and sell power to residents and businesses as an alternative to SDG&E. The sheriff has started up a heart team to help the homeless, and we'll have details on today's show. On Crime Beat, we'll have an update on a tragedy in Borrego Springs where two bodies were found in a home last week. From California News Service, hear a report on funding just approved by the governor to help English learner students in state public schools. Hummus is a Middle Eastern food that's popular in our region, but now there's a recall on many different hummus brands due to listeria. Find out how to stay safe on today's show. Plus, the FDA has issued a warning for dog owners after the deaths of dogs from consuming products that contain xylitol. That's a sweetener used in products ranging from gum and mints to toothpaste and peanut butter. Our media outlet has won another journalism award, this time for East County Magazine's reporting on the West Fire in Alpine, where our East County Wildfire and Emergency Alerts also help keep people safe and informed, starting just minutes after that devastating fire began. Our newsmaker interview today is with Warsan Arson, a Kenyan refugee who came here as a child and is now an activist with Youth Will, helping young people have their issues heard by political leaders in our region. On the second half of our show today, we'll be re-airing our interview with Krista Powers from the Mount Helix Park Foundation, sharing some fascinating facts about the history of Mount Helix and the many events held at the Mountaintop Park, including the upcoming Heart of Mount Helix Art and Wine Festival on August 10th. On Tribal Beat, hear the latest surprising twist in the saga of fire protection in Julian, where a Kumeyaay Land Trust now claims that a fire station taken over by the county from volunteer firefighters should revert back to Native Americans. Next, we'll take you on the road to the historic Campo Stone Store, site of a famous Wild West gunfight, where there's a museum upstairs that honors the Buffalo Soldiers, a Civil War cavalry brigade last stationed right here in East County. So stay tuned for the East County Magazine radio show where East County matters. This is Miriam Raftery with a weekly weather outlook. The National Weather Service says there will be chances for showers and thunderstorms continuing all week, especially during the afternoons and evenings, mainly over our mountain and desert areas. The strongest of these thunderstorms will be capable of isolated flash flooding and strong winds, so be sure to take appropriate precautions.
Welcome to the Public News Service Daily Newscast for Monday, July 22, 2019. I'm Mary Sherman. Stories we're covering today include, as the weekend heat wave subsides, a report predicts more killer heat in the future. Some Democrats continue to push for articles of impeachment against Trump. And could a House bill be a watershed moment for wildlife conservation? Our top story, temperatures on Sunday reach the upper 90s to 100 degrees from the Ohio Valley to the East Coast. And a new report finds the U.S. will have a lot more killer heat waves if the nation doesn't do something about climate change.
The Union of Concerned Scientists says Virginia usually has 31 days a year on average with a heat index above 90 degrees Fahrenheit, which is considered extreme heat. Its report says climate change would boost that number to 75 days a year on average by the middle of the century. Senior climate scientist Astrid Caldas says temperatures in the state will climb even higher.
Historically, there has been just one day across the state on average per year with a heat index above 105. But that would increase to 17 days per year on average by mid-century and 41 by century's end.
The Southeast is expected to have the most drastic growth in extreme heat days nationwide, the report said. This is Diane Bernard reporting.
Meanwhile, young people are leading the growing calls for the Democratic National Committee to allow a presidential primary debate on climate change. Eric Tegedoff explains.
DNC officials so far have resisted the standalone debate, saying they would have to hold other single-issue contests as well. But supporters reject this claim, saying climate change actually encompasses many other issues. Victoria Shea is the hub coordinator in Seattle for the Sunrise Movement, a nationwide youth-led group fighting for action on climate change.
The climate crisis itself is already affecting, and it touches on racial justice, economic justice. In some ways, it could be a national security issue. It's also related to immigration, where there will be an influx of climate refugees if we can't solve this crisis.
The second round of Democratic primary debates is taking place July 30th and 31st in Detroit. On August 22nd, the DNC will consider a resolution on a climate debate at their national meeting in San Francisco.
Top Democrats are continuing to pursue articles of impeachment against President Donald Trump. On Fox News Sunday, Representative Jerry Nadler accused Trump of committing high crimes and misdemeanors. The New York Democrats said Robert Mueller's report presents very substantial evidence and called for impeachment. Mueller, the former special counsel for the Department of Justice and former director of the FBI, will testify before Congress July 24th. Congress is considering a bill that would direct nearly $1.4 billion to state fish and wildlife agencies.
Introduced by Congresswoman Debbie Dingell, a Democrat from Michigan, and Republican Jeff Fortenberry of Nebraska, the Recovering America's Wildlife Act aims to help states protect an estimated 12,000 at-risk species of fish and wildlife across the country. Gordon Myers of the North Carolina Wildlife Resources Commission says the state has around 450 fish and wildlife species that need protection.
In North Carolina, we're a state that is more than 90% private land. Conservation is truly a team sport or partnership with implementing programs that help landowners achieve conservation outcomes while also meeting other desires on the land.
The bill has 70 co-sponsors. It now needs a vote by the House Natural Resources and Budget Committees. I'm Nadia Ramlagan.
Military officials say a Venezuelan fighter jet aggressively shadowed an American reconnaissance aircraft flying over the Caribbean last week. U.S. Southern Command said the incident underscored Venezuelan President Nicolas Maduro's disregard for international laws and agreements, as well as Russia's irresponsible military support for an illegitimate regime. Russia has backed Maduro amid U.S.-imposed sanctions. The latest data shows the U.S. economy added 224,000 jobs in June, with upticks in transportation and manufacturing. In West Virginia, construction trades are booming, and as Dan Hyman reports, it might be a much better career option than some women might realize.
Leona Messer of Alum Creek finished an apprenticeship last December and is now a working member of the Laborers Union, Local 1353. She says some women might assume a construction job isn't a good fit, but she says there's a solid career path as long as you're willing to take on the hard physical work.
I get along with every single one of the guys that I've ever worked with because they see that I work, and that's not an issue for them. You know, as long as you put forth the effort, they see, even though she's a woman, you know, she's busting her butt.
According to federal figures, the number of construction jobs in West Virginia has gone from about 30,000 at the start of 2017 to nearly 50,000 in June of this year. Although women in the U.S. earn only about 80% of what men make for similar work, women in the construction industry are paid more than 95% of what men make.
In health news, a new study finds about 1 in 12 patients around the globe suffer harm from medical errors, and half of the mistakes are preventable. The research from the University of Manchester found that tragically these errors are preventable, but leave about 12% of patients they affect permanently disabled or dead. In their new study, researchers point out that as many people say they've suffered harm in the process of their medical care as suffer from chronic diseases like multiple sclerosis in developed nations. I'm Mary Sherman for Public News Service. Member and listener supported and online at publicnewsservice.org.
CBS notes Omar, a Somali refugee who became a naturalized American citizen, is the only one of four women who was not born in the U.S. that Mr. Trump singled out. falsely claiming she blamed the U.S. for terrorist attacks. The predominantly white North Carolina rally crowd responded with those chants of "Send her back." A Michigan group that advocates for Muslims is filing a civil rights complaint today against Tim Hortons restaurants, claiming a worker there.
Now it's time for the Green Scene Report, highlighting energy, environmental, and sustainability issues in our community.
This is Miriam Raftery with a Green Scene Report. Should the County of San Diego buy, generate, and sell electricity, providing residents and businesses with an alternative to SDG&E? The county wants your input, so it's holding four informational forums in late July and early August. Supervisors started exploring the idea of starting a Community Choice Energy Program, also known as Community Choice Aggregation, back in February. Using a similar program called Direct Access, the county already buys electricity and natural gas for its own facilities on the open market instead of directly from SDG&E. During the last 3 years, the Direct Access program has saved our county an average of about $3 million a year. So now, supervisors are looking into whether the county should also provide community choice energy to residents and businesses in the unincorporated areas. Utility experts, consumer groups, and representatives from cities and counties that offer community choice all spoke before the board during a workshop in April. County staff is compiling information on the pros and cons of getting into the business of community choice energy and will present the results of a feasibility study and business plan to the Board of Supervisors in October. Meanwhile, you can learn more and voice your opinion at these four upcoming community choice energy forums, and they all start at 6 p.m. The locations are Monday, July 29th at the Bonita Sunnyside Library, Tuesday, July 30th at the Lakeside Community Center, Wednesday, July 31st at the Bonsold Community Center, and Tuesday, August 6th at the 4S Ranch Library.
The San Diego Sheriff's Department has formed a homeless assistance resource team known as HEART. It's comprised of a team of deputies assigned full-time to this effort, working exclusively with county agencies and non-governmental organizations on homeless outreach and services to the homeless in unincorporated areas. The HEART team started as a pilot project on June 10th. Their activities include informing homeless people of medical and psychiatric wellness services, food and shelter options, help with identification and documentation, and accessing public benefits, according to a press release issued by the Sheriff's Department. A video sent to media shows deputies contacting a homeless man living in a makeshift encampment in a riverbed, hidden among towering reeds. Sergeant Kenny Lawrence with the HEART team says deputies also helped the Department of Public Works to clean up some sites for health reasons, but outreach to those camped at the sites is also done a few days before any cleanup occurs. In the past, when cleanup of homeless camps occurred, belongings were often thrown away, though notice was always posted before a cleanup. Now, Sergeant Lawrence says, if no one is at the camp, a notice is posted advising where the property will be stored and how to retrieve it. We do not go in and take anyone's personal items for destruction, he adds. Homeless people are offered hotel vouchers and services. According to Sergeant Lawrence, the goal of all of our outreach operations is to get those in need into permanent housing. The hotels work as a way to bridge the gap from homelessness and permanent housing. It also helps our outreach partners know where the individual is so that the proper resources can be given to that individual. If a homeless person has a pet, such as a dog, Sergeant Lawrence says, we do everything we can to keep the two together. If that's not possible, Animal Services is contacted and the owner is advised how to retrieve their pet when they are able to do so. According to the annual point-in-time homeless count done in January, East County has 13% of the total homeless population in San Diego County. The count found over 1,000 homeless people in East County, of whom nearly half remain unsheltered, sleeping in parks, on sidewalks, in riverbed encampments, or in vehicles. The HEART team aims to help these individuals, bringing hope to the homeless. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Jonathan Goetz.
This is East County Magazine's Crime Beat. On the streets, reporting on crimes impacting communities across our region, helping to keep you safe and informed.
This is Miriam Raftery with a Crime Beat report. The county medical examiner has ruled that the deaths of a mother and son in Borrego Springs were due to a murder-suicide. Corey Sides fatally shot his mother, Ann Sides, then killed himself with the gun, the coroner concluded. Their bodies were discovered at their home on Double O Road in Borrego Springs on July 17th by sheriff's deputies and a Borrego Fire Department crew after a resident called to report that she had not seen her neighbors in 5 days. No motive for the killings has been disclosed, and anyone with information is asked to contact the sheriff's station in Borrego.
1 in 4 public school students in California is an English learner, and now programs to help them become more fluent will be funded to the tune of $10 million. The Newsom administration has agreed to add those funds to the current budget, and lawmakers will then hold until next year a bill that would fund bilingual programs going forward. Efren Mercado, who is part of the state's dual instruction transition team and is director of education for the nonprofit Children Now, says the money would be used to implement Prop 58, the Global Education Initiative, which was a reversal of the Prop 227 English-only approach from the 90s.
We used to think that students had to have English-only instruction in their main classroom, and then they would be pulled out for special sheltered classes. Today, it's much more integrated.
There are 1.4 million English learners in the Golden State public school system. California students speak more than 60 native languages, and 60% of children younger than age 5 were born into homes where English is a second language. Mercado says in the 80s and 90s, the ESL programs made students feel like their first language was devalued, whereas the current curriculum celebrates diversity.
Now it's respecting the home language, having that home language be an asset as opposed to a detriment. Use that as a bridge to learning English.
Mercado hopes the program will improve the graduation rate for English learners, which stands at just under 71%, compared with 85.1% in the general student population. For California News Service, I'm Suzanne Potter.
This is Miriam Raftery with a health alert. Over 75 hummus products distributed nationwide and sold under multiple brand names have been recalled by PetaPal Foods due to concerns over listeria. The recalled brands include Boosie's, Fresh Thyme, Harris Teeter, Hummus Hummus, Lantana, PetaPal, Reese's, Roundy's, Schnucks, and 7-Select. All of the recalled hummus products were manufactured between May 30th and June 25th. Listeria could cause serious and sometimes fatal infections in young children, frail, and elderly people. Healthy individuals may suffer only short-term symptoms, such as high fever, severe headaches, stiffness, nausea, abdominal pain, and diarrhea. Consumers who have purchased any recalled hummus products can return them to the place of purchase for a full refund.
The Food and Drug Administration has issued warning for dog owners to beware of foods and medications containing xylitol after reports of numerous dog deaths linked to the sweetener. Xylitol can kill a dog in just 10 to 60 minutes, or symptoms may occur up to 24 hours after ingestion. The FDA urges dog owners to avoid any products containing xylitol and to seek immediate emergency veterinary care if a dog swallows anything containing xylitol. Xylitol is used in sugarless gums, mints, sugar-free desserts such as skinny ice cream, baked goods such as cakes, muffins, or pies that may be labeled as safe for diabetics, as well as some peanut butter and other nut butters. It's also in some toothpastes, chewable vitamins and supplements, mouthwash, cough syrup, and certain over-the-counter medications. While xylitol is considered safe for humans, it is quickly absorbed into the bloodstream of dogs as well as ferrets, triggering a potentially fatal release of insulin from the pancreas. Always check labels to be sure there is no xylitol before giving any human food products to your pets, especially in products advertised as sugar-free or low in sugar. It's spelled X-Y-L-I-T-O-L. Keep all products with xylitol out of pets' reach, and remember that pets may paw through a purse or backpack to find treats or pull items left too close to the edge of a countertop. If your dog accidentally consumes even a small amount of a product with xylitol, call your veterinarian or poison control center immediately and report any adverse reactions to the FDA. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Jonathan Getz.
You are listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, broadcasting from the desert to the sea.
East County Magazine's reporting on the West Fire in Alpine last year has received an award from the Society of Professional Journalists San Diego Chapter. The series, written by our editor Miriam Raftery, producer of the East County Magazine radio show, won a third-place prize in the Daily Reporting and Writing Series category. East County Magazine's Wildfire and Emergency Alert Service first reported on the West Fire in Alpine just 6 minutes after the devastating wildfire began, before dozens of homes were burned, providing critical time for families to evacuate. You can sign up to receive free East County Wildfire and Emergency Alerts or support our reporting in the public interest at eastcountymagazine.org. Now, straight from the headlines, bringing you our latest top newsmakers. This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine show on KNSJ, 89.1 FM Descanso, recording at our studio in East County. Today, my very special guest is Warsan Artan. Warsan came to our region as a refugee from Kenya, and she now resides in Lemon Grove. She's become a leader in San Diego's youth movement, including serving as an organizer in Youth Will, a nonprofit dedicated to making San Diego a world-class region for all children and young people. She's also launched a summer youth empowerment campaign this year, and recently Youth Will unveiled a Youth Bill of Rights and hosted a youth-oriented budget forum, among other activities. Warsan, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me.
Can you start by telling our listeners, how old were you when you fled Kenya, and what compelled you to become a refugee?
So I came to the United States when I was 10 years old, and my family is originally from Somalia and left Somalia because of the civil war. And my parents came to Kenya, and then after that, my brother, who has been originally in the U.S., sponsored us as refugees to come to the United States. And that's how we got here.
Oh, very good. So you were fleeing, or your parents had fled the civil war in Somalia. Were you in a refugee camp for a long time in Kenya?
No. So we lived as refugees in Kenya. Fortunately, we were never in a refugee camp.
So once you arrived in the United States, what was it like as a newcomer at just 10 years old from Africa growing up in Lemon Grove?
Well, I didn't speak English at all. So I remember I came here in 2006 towards the end of April. And I remember they placing me at the end of fourth grade. So I went to fourth grade for like about a month, which was odd because I didn't speak English. I didn't know anything. Oh, so wow. That took time for me to get used to the language and get used to the culture and get used to everything. But I think the language was the hardest part. But obviously, it was easier for me and my siblings, for example, because we were younger. And we immersed in the culture and in the environment a lot easier than our parents, for example. So
yeah,
even though it was hard at the beginning.
Very often the way with the refugees, the younger generation does assimilate a little bit more usually. It's a little easier than for the older folks.
Yeah.
So tell me about why you became involved in Youth Will.
So my involvement in youth issues started before I got involved in Youth Will. Like I said, I lived in Lemon Grove. I went to Lemon Grove Middle School. I went to Hillocks High. And then I went to San Diego State University after that. While I was at San Diego State, I actually got involved in student government and student organizations at San Diego State University. I was in the student government for a couple of years. I was also like the president of a pre-health organization at San Diego State University. And through that, that's when I got involved and like became passionate about youth issues and the things that we face as youth in San Diego County. And from there on, Sean, I actually campaigned for Sean, who is our executive director, when he was running for community college board. Mm-hmm. And that's how we met. And then that's how I got involved in Youth Will.
Very good. What do you think some of the biggest issues are that you see a need to address through groups like Youth Will?
Well, one of the main things that youth that we work with voice is that they are impacted by the issues that are faced in our community, whether that is the housing crisis, whether that's food insecurity, or, you know, the inaccessible the healthcare system is, whatever it might be, a lot of the youth are impacted by those issues. And a lot of time they feel like they are not part of the discussion when those issues are brought up. It's adults, you know, having those conversations True. Without the youth. So one of our main goals as Youth Will is to create a youth-centered environment where youth come together and are part of, you know, identifying problems in our community and discuss, you know, possible solutions for those problems. So in order to create and fight for a San Diego where every young person has everything that they need to be happy, healthy, and prepared to reach their full potential.
Very good. Do you serve all youth? Is there an age limit or a geographic boundary? Who's served by Youth Will?
So we serve youth across San Diego County, so not just San Diego City, but San Diego County, mm-hmm. So throughout the region. And we identify youth as anyone under 25, so 25 and under.
What is the Summer of Youth Empowerment campaign all about?
So the Summer of Youth Power is a series of forums on issues that were identified in the Bill of Rights, which is on the back of this paper. So earlier this year, when Youth Will rebranded, the youth at Youth Will met with youth organizations and youth across our county to discuss issues that they have faced. And the Youth Bill of Rights pretty much has 11 demands from the youth that they feel like every youth in San Diego has a right to. And this Summer of Youth Power, we are having 11 forums, each one on a specific right that was identified in the Bill of Rights. And these forums discuss issues from culturally responsive education to holistic health care to housing security and so on and so forth.
Yeah, so the Bill of Rights for Children and Youth of San Diego includes a broad range of issues. I'll summarize just a few of them here. That youth should be entitled to dignity and respect, free of abuse, neglect, exploitation, and so forth. They should have a safe and healthy environment with fresh air, clean water, open space, etc. Food and nutrition, transportation and mobility options, safe and sustained housing, free health care, comprehensive health care, the support and freedom to express themselves as far as faith, sexuality, gender, dress, speech, art, and so forth without fear of retribution, culturally responsive and inclusive education, restorative justice, and more. But those are just a few of the highlights on this list. So that's quite impressive. As far as the Youth Bill of Rights, is this something that you're trying to move through local governments, or it's just a proclamation, or what is the plan for it?
So the Youth Bill of Rights was developed by youth within Youth Will. And again, it contains 11 demands from our county and our officials that the youth who developed it feel like every young person has a right to. Our plan for, again, like I said, the 11 forums that we are having this summer are, each one is, for example, there's a right, as you have seen, about holistic healthcare. And we actually had, last week, had the forum on holistic healthcare.
So where can people find out about these forums if they're interested in participating?
Okay, so we have social media pages. So for example, if you go to Facebook at We Are Youth Will, we post our events constantly. So okay. That's where you can check it out. But yeah, so we are holding the forums, and the forums are, we want it to inspire a development for a regional children and youth development master plan.
You also had a youth-oriented budget forum recently. Can you tell us a little bit about what some of the budget priorities are? This was targeting specifically the San Diego City Council, and is the City Council paying attention?
So our youth budget forum was in collaboration with Supervisor Fletcher's office. It was a youth county budget forum. Our main goal, again, was, again, like as I mentioned, a lot of times youth feel like they're not part of the conversation when it comes to these issues. And our main goal was to create an environment where, so Supervisor Fletcher was there, people from his staff were there, people from Health and Human Services were there, people from Public Safety were there, so like individuals from Public Safety and Health and Human Services and so on and so forth. And we wanted to create this environment where our local representatives sort of answer to youth and discuss the issues that are specific to youth and answer those questions from the youth.
Excellent. What about the other four supervisors? Are they engaged at all in this?
We are definitely planning on working with them in the future.
Very good. What else is on your plate coming up?
So, again, we have the forums going on this summer. We have completed one so far, and we have about nine of them left. So, and after the forums, we want to have a huge, like a meeting where the youth present the ideas and the solutions that they have put together from the 11 forums and present it to local and community leaders, community of local officials, so on and so forth, and sort of present those solutions.
Now, you're starting with the county supervisors, but are you also outreaching, or do you plan to local governments in East County, such as Lemon Grove, where you live?
Yes. So actually, as we continue, we actually want to hold like mayoral forums, mm-hmm. where we invite the mayors that are running for San Diego City, for example, to come and present at community forums that are led by youth will and youth in our county.
Very good. How can people get involved and get more information or contact you if they want to learn more about the Youth Will nonprofit group or the many programs that we've been discussing here on today's show?
So, yes. So you can go to our website, www.youthwill.org.
Or youthwill.org.
Yes. Or our social media pages, so Facebook and Instagram and Twitter. It's We Are Youth Will. Together, We Are Youth Will. Those are our social media pages. So yeah, you can check us out. Thank you.
Well, it's very exciting. It's wonderful to see young people getting so engaged and involved in the political process to speak out and let their voices be heard. Warsan, I'm going to give you the last word today. Listeners, we're here with Warsan Artan, who came here as a refugee from Kenya at age 10. She lives in Lemon Grove, and she's now a youth organizer in Youth Will, a local nonprofit representing children and young people's interests. Warsan, what else would you like our listeners to know today that I haven't already asked you about?
Well, yeah, I just want to encourage everyone to get out there and get involved and check us out. And yeah, thank you so much for having me.
You're welcome. Thanks so much for joining us today on the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ, the Network for Social Justice.
You are listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, broadcasting from the desert to the sea.
The East County Magazine Show on KNSJ Radio is produced by the nonprofit Heartland Coalition. We're your community news. We reflect your interests, not special interests. You can get involved by volunteering, get trained to be a citizen journalist, and support East County Magazine at www.eastcountymagazine.org. And you can send your news tips and story ideas to editor@eastcountymagazine.org. Now stay tuned for part two of the East County Magazine radio show. Now, straight from the headlines, bringing you our latest top newsmakers. This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, recording at our studio in East County. And our very special guest today is Krista Powers with the Mount Helix Park Foundation, and she is here today to talk about their big event of the year coming up on August 10th, the Heart of Mount Helix event. We're also going to hear a little bit about the history of Mount Helix and some of the other amazing things that are going on nowadays at the park. Krista, welcome to the show.
Hi, Miriam. Thank you so much for having me.
Well, it's a pleasure. I live in the Mount Helix area myself and have enjoyed a lot of the great events up there, so it's a pleasure to have you here. So for people who may not be familiar, can you start by telling us a little bit about the history of Mount Helix and the park on top?
Sure, I would love to. It's an absolutely fascinating history. Basically, people have been gathering up on the top of the mountain since late 1800s. Another thing in 1917, roughly the Ad and Marketing Club back then started an Easter sunrise service up at the top. And then fast forward that into the park that we now have that came about because the mother of the Yaki family used to love to come up there, but always remarked that she wished that there was a more comfortable place to sit. And so out of that came her children creating the beautiful outdoor nature stone amphitheater and the 35-foot memorial cross that sits at about a little over 1,300 feet, as well as the historic rock wall that you can see as you drive all along Mount Helix Drive. And the amphitheater sits about, I believe we can fit almost 2,000 guests in there, which
wow.
is really exciting.
It's really a dramatic location. I've been up there for summer theater in past years when they did that there. You have the 360-degree views, mm-hmm. so you can watch the sunset and the stars coming up all over and the city lights. It's really a wonderful setting. Bit of history on the cross itself, by the way. There was actually a lawsuit at one time that went all the way to the Supreme Court, and as a result of that, if I'm remembering correctly, the city of La Mesa deeded over the land, and thus the private foundation now runs that to avoid separation of church and state issues.
Yeah, and I remember being in high school in the 90s and going with my mom to get petitions signed to save the cross and doing candlelight walks up to the top of the cross. And because I grew up playing at that park, and so it was a very important part of my life. And then now my two young boys get to play in the park. So yeah, because the separation of church and state, I mean, the family originally thought that they were giving this beautiful gift to the county. And unfortunately, because the county has so many responsibilities, it was kind of a little bit of an afterthought for them.
At one point, there was a Supreme Court decision that said you can't have crosses on public land.
I think that actually came out of the Mount Soledad case.
And so the land wound up being transferred from a local government entity to the Mount Helix Park Foundation, and they've been improving it and coming up with new things there ever since. So, Krista, fast forward a little bit. Tell us about how this has evolved through the years.
So basically in 1999, the foundation was formed to privatize the land and be able to save the park. And with that, we started restoring it. One of our major initiatives that we've been involved with is native habitat restoration. So it's really been an amazing transition to see like all the wildlife that's up at the park now. And we're in full bloom right now with butterflies, bees, birds, and just, I feel like I'm Snow White when I'm walking around the park, basically. It's incredible.
Wonderful. That's just great news. Now tell us about some of the events that are held up there each year.
Yes. So it's actually, the park is still governed by the Yawkey Family Trust as originally intended.
So when the Yawkey family donated it, I understand that there was a commitment to provide certain events open to the community.
Yes. So we provide a annual Easter sunrise service every single year, and it's been officially going on under the park since 1925 was when the amphitheater was actually built. But as I mentioned earlier, the Ag Club had actually started in 1917. But we continue to operate that service every single year. And a variety of local churches in the area come together to help produce the event for the community. So it's a really special, this year we had about 1,500 people. And it's just amazing to get there in the morning when it's dark. And then it seems to happen every single year that the clouds spread and the rays shine through right as the music for the service starts. It's really just awe-inspiring.
Very interesting. Yeah, I've been to that. Now, that's just one day out of the year, but what about the other 364 days a year for those who may just have heard of the sunrise service and not everything else?
Right. We do quite a few things, and we're starting to also look to a few more community events. And some of our other ones are, we have a great, fantastic Christmas caroling event, complete with Santa Claus, a great sing-along for everyone. We have the Old Town Trolley, full of Christmas lights, bringing people up the mountain. And we serve hot cocoa and some other refreshments for guests. This year, we're looking at evolving it even a little bit further and starting it earlier and making it more, if you've ever been to some of the Christmas markets in Europe, so kind of a little bit more of that flavor.
Oh, wow.
Obviously, we don't quite have the real estate or the flat ground to be able to fully do it, but we will try our best.
And now, there's classes and things up there, too.
There sure are. We have a lovely lady who does a kids' art camp. We have a community lecture that we do twice a year, and it's a nature lecture. We just held one, and it was gardening for pollinators. And so we got Dictionary Hill expert to come and give a talk, and then walk along our Yawkey trail and point out all the different native plants and what types of butterflies and pollinators that they might attract, so that people could then go and plant them in their own yard. We hope to create this pollinator pathway throughout San Diego. Wonderful. Up to Mount Helix, and especially here in our local East County area, because it's not just about having these pockets of native plants. You kind of have to create a pathway for them to travel on.
Right. Connectivity. And all of this, listeners, is part of the Mount Helix Park Foundation's commitment as a nonprofit to give back to the community with so many of these wonderful things. Now, you also do yoga classes. classes?
We do yoga classes every Monday through Friday. They start at 9 a.m. And then we also have an astronomy night that will be coming up in September. We have some weddings and some other events that happen throughout the year.
In past years, too, it varies, of course, from year to year. But some years there's been summer theater up there, not this particular summer. There have been concerts. Mm-hmm. The acoustics are amazing. I remember going to a piano concert up there one year. Yeah. It's just a wonderful experience.
And then we also have our Halloween Harvest Festival that will be coming up. It's always the Saturday before Halloween. And we have a live band, a kids' costume parade, a bunch of vendors that are doing fun activities for children. And it's really fun.
Now, the biggest event of the year is the Heart of Mount Helix event, which happens every summer, and it is, I understand, the event that helps fund so many of these other community activities. So tell us when that's going to take place this year.
Yes, so our 12th annual Heart of Mount Helix event is happening on August 10th this year. And it's slowly evolved over the years, and now it's basically this year turned into a wonderful food and wine festival for East County and all the community that wants to come support us.
It sounds like fun. So you can look at art. Can people buy art if they want to?
People can purchase art. We have various local artists. It's very important to us that we do support the artists of East County. And that was kind of the foundation originally of the event, as well as the park. We also have we have about 18 restaurants from out here in East County that will be sampling. We have a couple wineries and breweries and distilleries that will all be providing samples to the people at the Food and Wine Festival.
Yeah, it just seems to get bigger and better every year. Speaking as a Mount Helix resident myself, now this isn't just any food and wine festival. There's a lot more to it than that. Give us a little bit of an idea of what the actual experience is like when you first arrive. First of all, I understand there's a new shuttle this year, so if people are worried about parking, that's no longer an issue. When you walk in the entrance, what do you see?
Well, yeah, I'm glad that you touched on the shuttle, because that is really important so that people know where to park. So this year, we're just doing two parking locations. Grossmont High School will be the main parking, and I recommend most people park there because you're guaranteed to find a spot. The other spot that people know about is at Fire Station 21. However, that fills up almost immediately. The other difference this year is that people will actually be checking in for the event when they park. And they'll be getting their wristband there. And then they'll be hopping on the Old Town Trolley that everybody has so much fun with. And they're a great partner of ours. And so they come up the mountain, and right away they guest walk into a living art experience. So there'll be live artists there painting. There will be some food and beverage samplings that guests can kind of walk around. Our raffle will be there, and then they can continue up the side road. There will be a couple more little treats that are new this year up that road. And then once they get up to Sunset Peak, where they have the 360-degree view around the cross, we have more wine this year, more beer, a couple more restaurants, and then there'll be another live band up there.
And you can do Dancing Under the Stars.
Yeah, so the first half of the event is from 5 to 7, and that's the sampling event. And then at about 7-ish, guests usually continue on down into the main Nature Park Theater, to where the live action really starts happening with our live auction. We have a cooking demonstration happening. So after live auction, we have a new VIP experience this year with lounge furniture, and our guests in the VIP area will actually get their samplings continued until 10 p.m. So that's a lot of fun for them. And then the Good Mojo Band goes on live at about 8 o'clock-ish.
Very good. Well, it sounds like an exciting event coming up. Will there also be a silent auction or any prize drawings this year?
Yeah, we will have a really fun high-value raffle. So we've kind of shrunken down a couple of things, and basically the high-value raffles, just a bigger basket with more in it, and people will be able to buy raffle tickets and put those in front of whatever they would like to go home with.
That's nice.
Yeah, and we're continuing again with our live auction that I know everybody loves, because we have all kinds of things from stays in Coronado, Palm Springs, Las Vegas.
There you go. So if you need a vacation, here's where you can get one.
Yeah, dinner at the Rotating Home, private dinner at Mount Helix Park.
Oh, yeah, that's just the roundhouse on Mount Helix.
Olympics.
Yes.
Once, I didn't know. That's one of the prizes.
Yeah. And then our raffle also has a helicopter ride and a taste of La Mesa and some other fun stuff. So we have several different entertainers that are coming. And I know for a fact right now we have confirmed that Allie Younker will be involved. And she has a gorgeous, beautiful voice and plays guitar. And then the Tradesmen will be playing Up by the Cross, and they're a local East County band and big supporters of the park as well. And then the evening will be capped off with a well-known East County band called Good Mojo. And they play a lot of, everything from Adele, Aretha Franklin, up through some more modern top 40 stuff.
Now, if people want tickets or they want to learn more about the Heart of Mount Helix event coming up on August 10th, where can they go?
They can go to Mount MT Helix, H-E-L-I-X, Park, P-A-R-K.org.
Very good. Krista, I'm going to let you have the last word today. Is there anything else you'd like our listeners to know about the Mount Helix Park Foundation or the Heart of Mount Helix event coming up?
There are a lot of people who do not realize that we really don't receive any funding from the city or the county. So we rely 100% on our donors and our volunteers. And we have some fun stuff. If you go to the website, we do a monthly first Saturday of every month volunteer in the park day.
Nice.
So people can come up, get involved, meet their friends in the community. We also have kind of a monthly third Wednesday of every month gathering at Helix Brewing. And that's just volunteers and their friends. And it's just a fun camaraderie gathering. And so, yeah, we really survive off of our donors and our volunteers. So please come volunteer at the park, stop by our office, say hi for a cup of coffee. We're there.
Very good. Well, I want to thank you so much, Krista, for taking the time to join us today on the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ Radio 89.1 FM, Descanso.
Thank you so much for having me today. I appreciate it.
You're listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, from the mountains to the sea. This is the East County Magazine Tribal Beat, bringing you news for and about our region's Native American communities.
This is Miriam Raftery with East County Magazine's Tribal Beat. A fierce battle over the future of fire protection in Julian just got even hotter. San Diego County's Fire Authority recently took over the Julian Cuyamaca Fire Protection District, the last all-volunteer firefighting district in our region amid a firestorm of controversy. And now, the county may lose access to the newly built Fire Station 56, that's just south of Julian on Highway 79, to a group of Native Americans. An attorney for the Kumeyaay Native American Land Conservancy has filed an eviction notice seeking to force the County Fire Authority, run by CAL FIRE, to get out of the station within 2 weeks and turn it back over to the Indian group. It's just the latest twist in a long and complex fight over who should provide fire protection for the mountain communities. The Julian Volunteer Firefighting Department was forced to dissolve and transfer firefighting duties to the county after both a Local Agency Formation Commission, or LAFCO, and a slim majority of the district's voters approved the change. But many Julian area residents are fighting to reverse that action through pending litigation, arguing that replacing 65 volunteer firefighters with just one CAL FIRE crew at a time does not provide adequate protection. However, the LAFCO action and the ballot measure both failed to take into account a potential land claim by the Kumeyaay, which the group is now asking a court to enforce. It all started when Julian resident Francis Mosler deeded the land on which the fire station now sits to the Native Americans for preservation before she passed away. The deed required that the Julian Cuyamaca Fire Protection District build and operate a fire station on a portion of the land, and that the land should revert back to the Kumeyaay Degeno group if the Volunteer Firefighting District should ever cease to operate a fire station on the site. John Eaglespear Elliott told county supervisors at a hearing in 2018, early in the process, by dissolving itself as a district, the property where the fire station was eventually constructed automatically reverts to the Kumeyaay Degeno Land Conservancy for its use consistent with the underlying deed. Supervisor Diane Jacob promised at the time that staff would look into the issue and work with Elliott. But Elliott says the conservancy was never approached by the county, LAFCO, or the Julian Volunteer Firefighters District. Now, a letter sent to the county on behalf of the Native Americans says the group has invoked its power of termination because the Volunteer Fire Protection District has abandoned the property.
The Conservancy considers the county fire authority's possession unlawful and wants the county evicted. But the county says it has no intention of vacating the fire station. A letter from Joshua Heinlein, senior deputy county counsel, sent to the Conservancy's attorney, argues that the Conservancy is wrong in stating that the Julian Cuyamaca Fire Protection District permanently abandoned the fire station on May 31st. Now, May 31st was when the San Diego Superior Court Judge Randa Trapp ordered the volunteers who had been occupying the fire station to leave the premises. The volunteers had argued that the election was illegal due to violations of the state's open government law, which occurred before the election. They claimed this should nullify the election and return control of the fire station to Julian's volunteer firefighters. The Julian volunteer's attorney, Corey Briggs, immediately filed an appeal, which by law should have triggered an automatic stay to halt Judge Trapp's order. This should have allowed the volunteers to stay in the station until their appeal was heard. And yet the next day, June 1st, the county fire authority, with backing of the sheriff, seized the fire station, changed all the locks, and took the keys to the fire trucks in apparent defiance of the law. Now, the county's letter to the Kumeyaay's Conservancy Group notes that a restraining order is in effect, which prevents Julian volunteers from using the fire station pending a decision by the appellate court. The county and the Julian Volunteer District are currently engaged in litigation regarding which of these entities has the legal right to provide fire protection services to Julian and the surrounding areas, the county's letter states, adding, once the litigation is resolved, the fire station will resume providing fire service to Julian and the surrounding areas. The letter warns that if the Indians Land Conservancy files a lawsuit, the county fire authority will vigorously assert its legal right to own and possess the property and continue its use as a fire station. Just what the Kumeyaay hope to do with the land if they are successful in reclaiming it is unclear. Perhaps the tribe aims to leverage the acquisition to form a new tribal-owned fire district to protect the mountain communities, or work to restore the right of the volunteers to run the station, or the fire station could be torn down and the land returned to its natural state as part of a broader preserve on land donated by Mrs. Mosler. Reporting from Julian, for East County Magazine on KNSJ, the Network for Social Justice, this is Miriam Raftery. Next up from County News Service, we're going to be hearing from Larry Johnson out at the old Campo Stone Store, one of East County's most unique and colorful historical landmarks.
If you're ever on Highway 94, about an hour east of San Diego, you might see this unique building.
Welcome to Historic Campo and the Gaskell Brothers Stone Store Museum.
The Gaskell Brothers built a fortress-like stone store in 1885. Previously, it was a wooden structure, the site of a famous shootout.
A group of bandits had been raiding down the coast of California, so gunfire started. And there was a big shootout. The guy that they had shot on before, one of the Gaskell brothers, didn't kill him. He jumped up, grabbed a shotgun, went out and shot people. And so they were shooting dead blank range around. And both Gaskell brothers were wounded. The locals were afraid of another raid. They couldn't get the military up here to guard and protect them. So they thought they needed a substantial building. So that's why they decided to build a building as thick as this and as strong as this. If you take a look around, if you come in, you'll see that the walls down here are about 4 foot thick. It's from stone that was quarried here on site by hand with hammer and drill and no backhoes or heavy lifting objects. It was manpower. It served as a store from 1885 until about 1927.
No longer a store, this building is now a museum, thanks to County Parks and the Mountain Empire Historical Society. Today, the store reflects the early life of the town of Campo.
When the Historical Society began, they tried to make it look a lot like it did in 1899, or when it was a store functioning to serve the local public. So they have gathered some of the food stuff, the tobaccos, the medical supplies, the ropes, the cans, anything that the ranchers needed. If they didn't have it, you didn't need it.
The building is filled with photos, books, artifacts from the Kumeyaay Indians who occupied the region prior to the settlers, and other rare items.
These shackles were found locally about 3 miles from here on a ranch in about 1885. A person who's bought the ranch found in the well the skeleton. On the skeleton, on the legs, were these shackles. They didn't know who the body was or who the skeleton was. It's still a mystery today. One of the interesting things about these shackles is they're blacksmith made. There's no lock to them. Once they were on, they were meant to stay.
Upstairs is an impressive exhibit dedicated to Campo's military history, including Camp Lockett.
Camp Lockett was started before the Japanese bombed Pearl Harbor. I guess the military was anticipating that there was going to be a war, and they needed another base here, and they needed a base in this area because of the railroad, which was a key supply line. We had a long exposed border, and one of the things they were afraid of was that if the Japanese came into the war, they might invade Mexico and come into San Diego. So this was sort of a critical point, and so they started building Camp Lockett.
The 10th Cavalry is one you may have heard of.
The famed Buffalo Soldiers, white officers and an African-American enlisted troops. And they were stationed here, and they were guarding tunnels and railroad and the border. Very tough, very good soldiers.
The museum is open on weekends, making for a nice day trip to learn about our local pioneers.
They were entrepreneurs, every one of them. They were constantly trying to figure out how to make the best of what they had and where they were, and to make a living and to leave history and substantial items behind them so that descendants would have something to live and work on and hopefully try and take care of.
This is Miriam Raftery with a weekly weather outlook. The National Weather Service says there will be chances for showers and thunderstorms continuing all week, especially during the afternoons and evenings, mainly over our mountain and desert areas. The strongest of these thunderstorms will be capable of isolated flash flooding and strong winds, so be sure to take appropriate precautions.
This is Miriam Raftery, producer of the East County Magazine radio show. If you would like to be the media, here's your opportunity. We're looking for some more talented volunteers for our East County Magazine radio show. So if you've got radio experience or just a great voice, or if you'd like to get experience writing scripts or special reports for the East County Magazine radio show on KNSJ, we'd like to hear from you. You can call us at 619-698-7617 or send an email to editor@eastcountymagazine.org. We're your community media, bringing you news from our region that reflects the public interest, not special interests. This concludes today's edition of the East County Magazine radio show. We extend our appreciation to the Heartland Coalition, our parent nonprofit, and to KNSJ 89.1 FM, broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso. We extend our appreciation to our sound technician, Jonathan Getz, and to our producer, Miriam Raftery. We also thank the musicians who provided music for our show, Laura Priebel, Jim Hannibal, Corey Clement, Giovanni Galicia and the Smashing Beats, Wooden Ambulance, Dusty Summer Road, A.K. Jewel, Brian Boyko, Royalty Free Music, Frank Nora, Kevin McLeod, April's Dance from the Smart Sound Solo Simplicity Collection, Turco, Nomads of the Silk Road, Blues 3 Music, and Pond 5. If you would like to underwrite or sponsor the East County Magazine radio show or get involved as a volunteer on our public interest news show, please contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org. We'll be back soon with another edition of the East County Magazine radio show. This is Miriam Raftery, producer of the East County Magazine radio show. If you would like to be the media, here's your opportunity. We're looking for some more talented volunteers for our East County Magazine radio show. So if you've got radio experience or just a great voice, or if you'd like to get experience writing scripts or special reports for the East County Magazine radio show on KNSJ, we'd like to hear from you. You can call us at 619-698-7617 or send an email to editor@eastcountymagazine.org. We're your community media, bringing you news from our region that reflects the public interest, not special interests.